Welcome to Startup Health Now, the weekly web show that celebrates the healthcare transformers and change makers reimagining health. My name is Unity Stokes, and today we are at the Wearable Tech and Digital Health Conference in San Francisco. We have a very special guest, Andreas Wiegand, and we're going to be talking about the new reality of social data. Stick around. It's going to be a great show.
It is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. Well, I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, the courage. Future is to those who take it.
Welcome, Andreas Wiegand. It's wonderful to be with you here. I thought we'd start the conversation by learning about you, your background. What's your personal passion?
I actually landed here in California on this day 30 years ago.
Wow.
I was an undergraduate at CERN in Geneva, and I came here to check out Berkeley and Stanford. And I remember the day because it was the day when the American landed in Libya. I'm not exactly landed, but they dropped some stuff off there in Libya. And if I think about it, those days were the days of almost no data. Mm. We depended on television to learn about the world. We were just like seeing the projections of what happened in the real world onto the wall of the cave, as it was in Plato.
They even called it mass media. Everyone was treated as the masses.
Yes, and as we know, the mass consumer is an invention of mass media. Mm. There was no mass consumer prior to that. Fast forward, 30 years later, personalized medicine. I did just a couple of weeks ago, a DNA test where the results tell me, how should I work out? What should I eat? Personalized medicine, not only for the individual, but also here connecting people, finding other people in the world who might have the same rare disease your child might have. So for me, those 30 years really were a communication revolution. We first connected computers. We then connected pages. As you know, mm-hmm. I was a chief scientist at Amazon. And now we're connecting people. And that's where I think the fun starts.
So, very exciting. So when did you first grow a love and a passion for data? Was it always with you from childhood? Or did you pick that up when you moved here to California? Where did that begin?
My dad was a physicist. So it really began when I was very little. When he just had us ask questions, wondering what answers data might give. And just like the German philosopher Hegel, he said, you know, Andreas, you need to ask the question. Nature only will say yes or no. Now, again, fast forward 50 years. Answering questions has become simple. Asking the questions is where, you know, the scarcity is these days. Mm.
So, as chief scientist at Amazon when you were there, what were some of the biggest lessons learned that bring you forward to where you are today, and also that you think would apply to the innovation taking place in healthcare?
So one of the things we learned was that when I started at Amazon, we thought that the most important about a person is their history, based on what you have looked at before or what you've purchased before, trying to figure out what you might be purchasing now. When I left Amazon, we realized that understanding the situation you are in is much more important than your history.
So your context for where you are
exactly.
now.
Exactly. The context that here We are at the conference, the Wearable Tech and Digital Health and Neurotalk conference is very different from if we were in Hawaii at the beach. Mm-hmm. So trying to figure out the context, which starts with the time of the day, which starts with the search term you're entering. Are you entering a very specific disease, or are you just saying, you know, I'm losing my hair? Mm-hmm. And it ends with the social context. Who are your friends? I just read the other day that there is a correlation between cul-de-sacs and obesity. So when you design a city, it actually matters how you lay out the cities, the grids, the streets, in how fat people become.
Because people are walking less.
People are walking less, and it even turns out that it was an urban myth thinking that the number of casualties, of deaths at cul-de-sacs is smaller than if there are thoroughfares. It turns out, and I think it was in Virginia where I did the experiments and very careful analysis, it turns out that even more people get killed in cul-de-sacs than in major streets. So that's an example where it made sense, but then it simply was wrong once the data came in, and that changes how people now think about designing cities.
So you talk about big data, but you also talk about social data. Mm-hmm. And I've heard you say the new reality of social data. What does that mean?
Yeah. So I was invited to give a talk at the United Nations General Assembly a few years ago, which we called Data is the New Oil. It turns out everything that, you know, anybody now says has been said before. At the time, you know, we made it up and we thought it was pretty cool. It was very interesting that this oil metaphor only went that far at the United Nations. So oil needs to be refined. Data needs to be refined. And today, after we are done here, I'll scoot over to Berkeley and I have the info session for my class this fall. The class is called Social Data Revolution. And the revolution has happened. You know, I sometimes say, what the KGB wouldn't have gotten out of you under torture, people now happily share with the world on Facebook. Mm. Now, where we are is the question, what tools do we build? And that's why I love teaching. What tools do the students build? What tools do the startups build that help people act upon those social data? Social data being data people create and share, whether they know it or not.
So in the context of this new social data, what would your advice be to startups today reinventing the future? They're designing the next apps, the next companies, the next solutions, but specifically in the context of health or healthcare. How should they be thinking about social data? How should they be designing it into their business model, their solution, their technology, their way of being?
There are five rules for how to think about data when you create a company. And they're all rules that are viewed from the consumer perspective. Because ultimately, you only have a company if you have actually people using your app or using your service. Rule number one, give the user access to their data. So it's not always clear. Some governments are ahead of others. The United States, the UK is particularly good at giving citizens access, but it's not across the world that you have access even to your government data, let alone to your data at some random health startup. Google is very good in allowing you to export your data. Facebook is good. And there are, of course, many wrinkles to that. Because what is your data? If I post something on Facebook and you comment, now I edit my post, your comment, well, it's not just your comment, but it's also the comment of your relationship, the relationship of your comment to what I said. So thinking about making it as easy as possible to give users access to the data is rule number one. Rule number two, allow your users to amend their data. So if
control
that device thinks that, you know, I did X, but I know what I did. It was Y. Then allow me to amend the data. Control is more general.
Okay.
Right now, I mean that there's a relationship between the datum
I see.
And a comment I make.
I see.
So if you want a four-letter word, it would be post.
Yes.
Three, the right to blur. So you don't want, with the finest granularity ever, to have everybody know, every company know about what you're up to. Well, when you get a pizza delivery, you do want the pizza delivery person to know where exactly you are. It doesn't help if you just say, I'm somewhere in San Francisco. However, when you want your East Coast friends to know, are you in town or are you somewhere in Los Angeles, then it's enough to let them know, or to let the world know, that you're in San Francisco. So you determine the granularity of your data. Or flipping it, the company needs to empower the user, to give the user the agency to set the radius of granularity. Hmm. So far we have the right to access. Then we have the right to amend. We have right to blur. There are two more. There's right to play. Play with your data. What I mean with this is play with the knobs of the refinery. The refinery, the startup, needs to give people controls where they can do scenarios. For instance, if I did not have that extra spaghetti carbonara today for lunch, what impact would that have for how fit I feel today? Or, you know, in the long term, if I cut down my carbonara intake, what will that mean when I'm 60 or 70? And now, the last right. The last right I just presented in this auditorium last week. And I demonstrated it with a bottle, because it is the right to port. Not to sherry, but to port. What I mean by this is that the startup in the health space needs to give the users the right to port their data.
To another app, another service.
To another app, to whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Think about how a bank gives you the right to port your money. It would not be a bank, which is in there for the long term, if when you want to take the money out, they say, oh, sorry, you know, you can't port your money. And there is a difference between the first one, the right to access, the right to see your data, and the last one. Think about it, the right to port is that you give them an API key. That I now, with that key, I'm a startup, I give you that key, and with that key, I guarantee as a startup that whoever takes those data, makes a copy of it, that that really is the data about you, as opposed to some fake screenshot you made and you don't know really whether it's true or not.
So you mentioned or you mentioned money and data in the same sentence. Do you see data being a currency? It's a type of currency.
Yeah, that is
today.
A metaphor which many people have used. I mentioned actually data is a new oil because I wanted to talk about that in its raw form. There might not be that much to data. So if Google gives you access to all the URLs in some, you know, digital encoding, some hashed version of them, it really doesn't do you much good.
You have to translate it, refine it, as you mentioned, and turn it into something of value.
Or your health data. If you're wearing a Fitbit and you don't have the calibration, if you're wearing an Apple Watch and you don't know how other people's data look, it's very difficult to actually come up with an interpretation, let alone to come up with an action for you. So I think the value is not primarily in the money. The value is whatever value people get out of it. And that can be things on very different timescales from getting paid. One thing is clear. The argument which we hear again and again that, like, Facebook should pay us for our data because, after all, they are using the data to do X, Y, Z. Well, if Facebook distributed all its profits, it would not even suffice for a cup of coffee for each user a quarter. So the value I'm getting out of Facebook Google.
It's much greater.
It's much greater than the monetary one. Mm. And I want people, and that's why I'm writing a book called Data for the People. Mm-hmm. That's why I want people to actually bark up the right trees and not the wrong trees. Mm-hmm. I want people to demand those things which ultimately make a difference and not, you know, just ask for, hey, you're getting rich, I want to get rich too.
So last question, what does the future look like? Where do things go? There's been extraordinary leaps forward in the last 20 years. You see what Amazon has done with data. Where does this go in the next 10 to 20 years? What's the future of big data?
I think the future of big data is small data. It is like, what is if the future of electricity? It is that we don't think about electricity anymore. Or, unless of course you live in Silicon Valley, you don't think about connectivity. Trying to finish a phone call on 280 is still a challenge. So I think the future of big data is when we don't even think about the data we create and share, but we just have that agency, we act upon it. It is there for us when we need it, it's refined for us in a way which is useful for us, as opposed to right now or, you know, a few years ago when people defined big data as it doesn't fit onto a single machine. That is so irrelevant. Mm. It is not the size that matters. Mm. It is what you do with it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with Startup Health Now and the community. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you soon. Thank you.